George Buck's dead. Last word he said, don't you put no shortening in my bread. George Buck is dead. Last word he said, don't you put no shortening in my bread.
This is part 4 of the radio adaptation of A Great American Tapestry, a 5-part audio documentary based on the film of the same name. I'm David Weintraub, the director and producer. This program is a production of the Center for Cultural Preservation, based in Hendersonville, North Carolina, and WNCW Radio. It's based on the film A Great American Tapestry, The Many Strands of Mountain Music, which is currently touring the region and is available on DVD with more information at saveculture.org. The film was made possible in part by Paul and Simone Shoemaker, Carola and Stuart Cohn, the Perry and Rudnick Endowment Fund, Jim and Barbara Neal, Helen Bishop, and Adept Word Management. Continuing with our discussion of Black influence on mountain music, another part of the overlooked history of this music is that some of the leading old-time and bluegrass performers were strongly influenced by African-American musicians. Starting things off today is Warren Wilson College Appalachian History Professor, Phil Jamison.
Bill Monroe, who is the father of bluegrass music, as a kid, learned a lot of his music from an African-American musician, Arnold Schultz, who was a fiddler and guitar player. And Bill Monroe, if he was sitting here beside me, he would tell you that a lot of the blues and bluegrass comes from that tradition.
Dom Flemons, Carolina Chocolate Drops co-founder, continues.
To bring it back to the old-timey music, you have people like Leslie Riddle, for example, who was a Piedmont-style guitar player from Burnsville, North Carolina. Leslie Riddle's most well-known for hanging with a fellow by the name of Alvin Pleasant Carter, A.P. Carter, and he was his running buddy. And so when A.P. was collecting songs for the Carter family, A.P. would take the words down, and Leslie was the one who'd take the melodies down, and he played on the guitar. He also taught Maybell a couple of things on the guitar, including a song called The Cannonball, which is Solid Gone, which is a song that's still played in old-time and bluegrass circles now. He wasn't, I don't think, interested in being a professional musician, but through his influence, we have what's considered white music to come out, and it's fueled, it's almost a super music, because it has all these elements combined within it.
Tommy Jarrell is known for his round peak style of fiddle playing in the Mount Airy section of North Carolina. Cece Conway, author of African Banjo Echoes of Appalachia, continues.
Tommy Jarrell, the old fiddle player, said that the first people around his area of Mount Airy to play the guitar were blacks and women. People who were not so much playing maybe fiddles and banjos at that time and got fascinated by this new instrument that could support the voice. And out of that, we had two new genres, the blues and early country like the Carter family.
No one influenced the breakthrough band, the Carolina Chocolate Drops, more than Joe Thompson. All three original founders of the group met each other and Joe at a black banjo conference at App State University.
I had the pleasure and the honor of being able to study with Joe in the last maybe 5-6-ish years of his life. So it was a great privilege to be able to study with somebody who, for whom this he felt a lot of affinity for this music, but who was not a professional musician. This is something he did because he just liked it and it was part of his life growing up. That gave a music a real context that somebody who plays music professionally can't quite give you. I think that so many more people know about Joe Thompson now after the Chocolate Drops success than would have ever known about him before. I feel like the ultimate gift to be able to give to Joe and to Joe's father and Joe's grandfather, because their musical legacy lives on. The chain is unbroken, which feels amazing.
Joe Thompson is an African-American fiddler from Piedmont, North Carolina. You know, I met him when he was 86, and what became the Carolina Chocolate Drops formed at his house, learning his music. Incredibly fortunate to be able to do that. I feel like we were so blessed. and he opened his house, and you know, we'd spend a lot of time with Joe, just playing the same tunes and listening to the same stories, and sometimes you get a little extra nugget, you know? And giving him the idea that his music was living on in his community was huge.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, hey ah, oh yeah.
The story of Southern Appalachian mountain music cannot be told without including the oldest mountain music legacy of all, the Cherokee, whose traditions date back at least 13,000 years. Brett Riggs is a Sequoia professor of Cherokee studies at Western Carolina University.
When the first Europeans contacted Cherokee peoples here in the southern mountains, they found folks living in fairly large communal villages. The center of civic life in those villages would be the council house or townhouse. There were very often dances that were held every week in some cases, sometimes even more frequently, within that council house. Those would be all-night dances. There were social dances and there were ceremonial dances. And there were whole cycles of dance that went on in these places. So there was very much a tradition of dance and music.
Bo Taylor is an accomplished musician and dancer with the Eastern Band of Cherokee, as well as serving as the director of the Museum of the Cherokee Indian.
Our songs and dances have, they're kind of, there's several things that are happening, you know, just like a bear dance, you know, it's a, you know, we're honoring the bear for what it does for us. But it also is a, it's a way of bringing people together and creating bonds, and you know, it's a, you know, if you're kind of sweet on somebody, you find somebody, a partner that you want to dance with, and you know, and you know, it's a courting dance. The women provide the rhythm. They wear the leg rattles on their legs. It sounds like a train. And they provide the rhythm. The dakshi, the turtle. Everybody working together. Because everybody sings in unison, there's a call and response. You know, in the African tradition, they have a call and response. La, 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 le. La 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 le, and they'll do this back and forth. It's the same thing. Yo halina, yo halina, yo halina, yo halina. Oh, yo halina, yo halina, yo halina, da, yo halina. And there's, and when you get those shells going, and the music's right, it becomes magical.
There was a real duality between Native peoples and the Europeans and their music. Music people tend to more readily adopt and adapt to the cultural influences around them. This was never more true than for the Cherokee.
After the arrival of Europeans and Africans, there's just more people in the mix. More people who have musical material, new forms, and for people who are already very musical, the native communities here, they're really interested in this other music coming.
Manco Sneed was considered one of the finest Appalachian fiddlers around. As a child of Cherokee ancestry, he was exposed to traditional mountain music through community dances. As a teenager, he moved to the Cherokee tribe and developed one of the most sophisticated fiddling styles. This is possibly because of his relative isolation from other mountain fiddlers. Brett Riggs continues.
Manco Sneed was a representative of a very musical family. We know that his brothers played. His father, John Harrison Sneed, was a very well-known fiddle player. And we can see in some documentary records that fiddle music in that family goes back at least to the time of the Cherokee removal of 1838. In the 1920s, 30s, 40s, into the 50s, Cherokee, North Carolina is a music venue. It's a music destination. Every weekend, the street would close up for a street dance, and there were different musicians who were coming in, joining local musicians. There were a number of musical families around Cherokee. The Swaneys are particularly well known. Of course, the Sneeds are very well known.
Another famous Cherokee musician with a unique Appalachian musical style was Walker Calhoun. Walker lived his entire life in the Big Cove community of Cherokee, North Carolina. Walker remembers strumming an old Sears catalog banjo he shared with his brothers as a boy. Later, a guitar appeared, and soon young Walker was learning to fingerpick traditional mountain ballads. However, when he was alone, Walker often played his true favorites, the ceremonial Cherokee dance songs taught to him by his ancestors. As an older man, he began a new career, performing the Cherokee art he had cherished his entire life. In a strong voice, he sang the traditional ceremonial songs he had been taught as a child.
This is this old man that I knew that knew Cherokee and was teaching me, and I seen him dance around a fire and sing and blow everybody away. A little old man, just amazing. But then I would have these people want to come and play banjo with him, to sit and pick and grin with him. He worked in a factory most of his life, providing for his family. But when it wasn't until he got older that he came into prominence. People started realizing, hey, there ain't anybody else can sing these songs. And, you know, he said, I can.
Today, little is known about the Cherokee musical tradition or the cross-cultural connections that fed into Appalachian mountain music's blended tradition.
Music experience of the Southern Mountains has really been whitewashed. Those other parts of the story have been left out, sometimes accidentally, sometimes on purpose, to effect this idea of what is pure and what is native to Southern whites, when the reality, I think, is much more interesting.
In part 5 of The Great American Tapestry, we focus on the value of remembering the blended traditions of mountain music.
Georgia Buck's dead. Last word said, don't you put no shortening in my bread. Don't you put no shortening in my bread now, now. Don't put no shortening in my bread.
This program was produced for WNCW by Kim Clark.